Just a few hours ago, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the nation's largest Lutheran denomination, released its long-awaited 28-page report on same-sex unions and gay clergy. It announced that there would be no change in written policies. The ELCA does not bless same-sex relationships, and it expects ministers to refrain from sexual relations outside of marriage, and marriage is defined as between a man and a woman. They will, though, recommend that local church leaders have more say in when to discipline their congregations over these issues. Joining us now to talk about the details of the report is the Reverend James Childs, the director of the ELCA's Studies on Sexuality. He's with us by phone from his office in Chicago, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
So after, as I understand it, this report has been prepared over the course of 3 years to present these issues in such a way as for a vote next August.
That's right. The task force makes recommendations, and we've released the report this early in the year so that the church might deliberate over it and prepare how to respond to it before the August churchwide assembly. So we make the recommendations. The church now must deliberate and make decisions ultimately.
Now, over the course of this 3 years of study and debate and I suspect prayer on this issue, a lot of people have been heard from.
Oh, yes. We have we released a study booklet in September of 2003. Over 100,000 of these copies were in circulation and in use. We received 28,000 responses plus from people who participated in the study. We have held hearings at various places in the church, and I and other members and members of the task force have been present in forums of one kind or another throughout the length and breadth of the country. So we've tried very, very hard to listen carefully and to hear all voices.
Now, after all of this effort to come up with a report that basically says we're not changing policy except we're going to give local churches some leeway here, some would say you're just ducking this debate.
No, I think what we're doing instead is suggesting that while the majority, we're saying that while the majority of the respondents in the church are not satisfied that the case has been made for change, there is a significant minority of people who feel otherwise, and we need to respect one another's consciences in this matter. To make a change in the face of that majority does not seem faithful, but to neglect the consciences and goodwill of the minority does not either. So these recommendations are designed to keep us engaged with one another rather than trying to legislate our theological questions by making some policy resolutions at the churchwide assembly.
As of course you know, this is a divisive, emotional issue in not just your church, but in many churches throughout the country.
Absolutely.
And I know that some churches within your denomination have left your church over this issue.
Well, I could not speak definitively about numbers or anything of the sort. There have been instances where congregations have left, but I do not think the magnitude of that action is great.
Does this report will this be presented in August for debate amongst the on the floor there? Is this report going to be the basis of the debate?
Not necessarily. The Conference of Bishops will be reviewing it. Congregations can have routes to submit their recommendations for change or whatever they think is good. And the Church Council in April will actually craft the resolution that goes to the floor of the churchwide assembly. They may or may not craft a resolution consistent with our recommendations. And then synodical assemblies meet after that before the August churchwide, and they too have an opportunity to submit memorials that may modify the situation as they see fit. The voting members in August will, regardless, have our report and recommendations as presently stated, mm-hmm. but they may be presented with other alternatives at the same time.
And there are dissenting voices even in your report.
There are dissenting voices, yes.
And they might be summarized as being basically the two sides, one saying the church should enforce the rules as written, and the other one says they should change them.
That would be the simplest way to put it, right?
Okay. Well, let's keep it simple. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. And let's talk with David. David's calling from Norfolk, Virginia.
Hi. How are you all?
Very well.
I have a two-part question. I'm a United Methodist minister, and we've been going through this same debate for quite a while now. And I can take my answer off the phone, but two issues I'm wondering about. First, how does this specifically affect clergy sanctions within the ECLA? Is there a specific recommendation to sanction clergy that perform same-sex unions? And the second question is just where does he see the mainline, all the mainline churches headed with this entire issue? I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, David.
Well, to the answer to the first question is that the present policy of the ELCA does not explicitly forbid pastors from blessing same-sex unions. We have the statement of the 1993 Bishops Conference, which we said in our recommendation should be continued to be respected among us, in which they are saying there's no basis for establishing this as an official right of the church, but that does not prohibit people from blessing such unions in some way or another. And our recommendation simply suggests that people should respect the consciences of those who feel, and we don't even use the word blessing, feel that it is pastorally desirable to surround same-sex couples with prayerful support. So at the present time, even without this recommendation, there's no basis for disciplining pastors on that account. With respect to the second question, could you help me to remember it? I'm sorry.
This was where he thought the main line of not just Lutherans but other religions, I suspect, are coming down on this issue.
Well, at the present time, of course, there's evidence that every mainline church has this kind of dispute going on within its ranks, even though the United Methodists, for example, have taken a very firm policy stand, there are still those among them who have different viewpoints. The United Church of Christ, for example, on the other side, which has permitted blessing such unions and ordaining people in those unions, has nonetheless not unanimity within its ranks, so that every locale in the UCC would not be in favor of such practices. So at the present time, the overwhelming majority of mainline churches do not permit blessing or ordination, but all of them have the dispute ongoing.
It's interesting. One of the things that your report recommends is that if those things do go ahead in local churches, which would be allowed under this recommendation, please don't publicize it.
Well, we're trying to suggest that respect for conscience means not to get in one another's face, so to speak. I mean, to try and scandalize others who have also a conscience-bound conviction of another sort. And to do that, again, within the realm of pastoral concern rather than in the realm of public advocacy or conflict of that kind.
Though the report also adds, we have no control over that.
Yeah, well, that's true. The report is, pastoral rather than legal in tone.
Let's get another caller in. This is Steve, who joins us from San Francisco.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I'm interested in this discussion. Specifically, I'm interested to know, how was the gay community actively involved? How were opinions and feelings actively elicited from the gay community during the development of this report?
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I'm thinking about that, although this question concerns the Lutheran community, this question, of course, concerns the community at large, both the gay and straight communities, but specifically the gay community. So how were opinions actively elicited?
Thank you. Well, we had representatives from a number of organizations, gay and lesbian organizations that associate themselves with the Lutheran Church, coming in to talk to the task force. We were supplied with a significant amount of literature and videos and the like from that community. We had regular visitors at the task force meetings from the gay and lesbian community. We had gay and lesbian representation on the task force. So we attempted in with every means possible to make sure that those voices were heard and elicited.
Could I get a little more detail from you about what types of organizations and were represented and who the representatives were?
Well, I can't give you the names of the representatives.
What about the organizations?
But I can tell you the organizations, yeah. Well, first of all, there is Lutherans Concerned, which is a major organization that's been operative in our circles for a very long time. Then there is the Extraordinary Candidacy Program, which is a program that processes candidates who are in committed same-sex unions in much the same way that the church does, but recognizing that under present rubrics that's not possible, and then presents these candidates for whatever opportunities may exist. Mm-hmm. There are several others, the network, and I'm, you know, I don't have my notes in front of me, but there are about five or six organizations, each of whom represents the interests of the gay and lesbian communities within the church.
Steve, thank you.
Okay.
One final email question before we let you go, Reverend. This from Robert Fiducia in Charlotte, North Carolina. Many fundamentalist Christians are confused by another church's acceptance of homosexual activity when one considers the apparent biblical clarity on the issue. Could you ask your guest to describe how theologically those in favor of same-sex unions frame their argument?
Those who are in favor of same-sex unions would argue that the specific verses in the Bible which condemn same-sex conduct do not have in mind what we understand today as people who are of a given homosexual orientation rather than people who are choosing that as a lifestyle, so to speak, and that they do not have in mind, therefore, loving relationships, committed relationships, just relationships, taken on under the desire for the church's blessing, so that they feel that instead the quality, the rightness or wrongness of the relationship should not be judged by whether or not it is a same-sex relationship, but should be judged by the quality of commitment, fidelity, and so forth.
Reverend Childs, thanks very much for being with us today.
You bet. Thank you.
James Child is director of the Evangelical Lutheran Churches in America's Studies on Sexuality, and he was with us by phone from his office in Chicago. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now to talk about how one particular congregation has been dealing with this issue is the Reverend Seth Molden Kovash, the pastor of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and he's with us by phone from his office there. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Were you surprised by this report's recommendation?
I must say I was a bit surprised. I think I had expected, as one member and leader in the church had hoped for the task force to recommend a more challenging and welcoming stance.
Your congregation was among the many that met. I'm just trying to actually interpret that last answer. Are you saying that you wanted to be more open towards gays and lesbians?
Yes, I did, yes.
Okay. Your congregation was among the many that met in study groups to discuss how this current policy. Did the congregation have a lot of interest in this issue? Was it painful? Was it a useful conversation?
I think it was a very useful conversation. There was a lot of interest. We, among the pastoral staff here, led going through the study materials that Reverend Childs and others had developed and asked for input. We had a response of about 200 people, which for us in an involvement in a study is a good response. So I think there's a lot of interest and people looking forward to see what might happen.
And in terms of the painful part, did you lose members at all?
Our own congregation has lost a number of members, a small number, but folks who, as your last emailer talked about, just could not understand why we would even be discussing this issue. It seemed clear and cut and dried to them, and they chose to find a home in a church that would speak to that.
We just have a few seconds left. I wonder if after this report, a three-year study comes up with no clear recommendation, do you expect that this is going to be a bitter debate come August?
I think it will be to some degree. I think that there will be disappointment on both sides, folks who had looked for clarity. But I think that the lack of recommendation of a change will continue in the status quo, and we will still have division in the church, but I don't believe that it will be a major division.
Reverend, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Reverend Seth Molan Kovash is the pastor of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and he was kind enough to join us from his office in Arlington Heights. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.